5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Ferrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Ferrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. Ferrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out a bad seat, a broken ain't a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad day, bad lie, bad do, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibe. We are live in the Magic City Studios in the Ferrell Palatial, right across the room through the woods from where Granny loves her blueberry. Before going to bed in New York City, the Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, the bridge of traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up, should do. But all my friends that come around, flat to party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown. What a mess, this town's a tatter, my brain splattered all over Manhattan, should do be sure I got, Hey, what's gigging? I'm Ferrell, Mafia's running it. There is massive activity tonight. Everything is going down. And, I mean, in order of importance, let's just get right to it. Game 5 at Oracle, winner take all, Giants and Dodgers scoreless, going to the top of the fourth inning. So nobody's done anything. The Dodgers have used two pitchers, Knebel, Gratterall, and now Urias is in the game, and he's going to allegedly work the rest of the way or until they have trouble, if any. And then Webb is going from the jump for the Giants. So far, nothing. Donuts, no score. NFL, going to the second half, the Buccaneers lead the Eagles 21-7. Total domination by Tampa. Brady, 20 of 26, 186 yards, 2 TDs, and a pick. Might have had two picks. It took 15 minutes to review a pick that they said was not a pick. It was embarrassing how long it took the NFL to make up their effing minds. Oh, my God. I mean, you could have had two birthdays at the link waiting for that replay. I mean, he either caught it or he didn't. I don't understand what takes so long. What a disaster that is. I'm telling you, I've been to a bunch of NFL games this year live, and there is nothing more painful than sitting in an NFL stadium with all the timeouts and all the replays and all the injuries. I mean, it's like, honestly, they barely play any football at all. I mean, it's just a giant advertisement and a big giant stand around holding your D with nothing to do ever. You should see these teams. They just stand on the field and stare, and they have nothing going on. They never play football. But speaking of never playing football, the Eagles are not playing football tonight. Hurts has been terrible. 54 yards, a touchdown to Hurts, but he has been terrible. He's got a pick. He's 5 of 14. He's throwing the ball over receivers, under receivers, behind receivers. I mean, he is just a mess. And this is the first time I've actually seen Tampa's defense the entire season so far. Here we are, week 6, the first time they've looked good. They're getting after Hurts and giving him all kinds of problems. Fournette's got a touchdown, 12 carries, 40 yards. I think he's 10 yards away from beating that total of 28.5 receiving yards. He got an 18-yard pickup, so he'll probably go over the rainbow on that. Brown's got 5 receptions, 52 yards, and a touchdown for the Buccaneers. Total domination. The Eagles get the second half kick right now, and that'll be that. As far as college football, I gave you two games today. Memphis and Lane, they're up 35-17 with 11 minutes left. And I gave you South Alabama laying, and they're up 38-11 after three quarters. We welcome all of our radio affiliates to the show. So Memphis was laying 10 and a hook when it opened up. South Bama laying 3. And I'm on those right now, money line and spread. So hopefully we can get those to pull in. And then you got hockey, a crazy game tonight in Florida. The Penguins led by 2 goals in the third period, but the Panthers tied it up, and then they won it in overtime. They were packed and rowdy in the Panthers' home opener in Sunrise. And they got a good team down there now, Joel Quenneville. They really do. They're dangerous. I had them to beat the Penguins tonight, and they did. Penguins should have won the game, though, up 4-2 in the third. Sabres upset the Canadiens. I can't believe it. I almost fell over 5-1. I hit the Senators upset of the Leafs 3-2. The Stars beat the Rangers in overtime 3-2. The Hurricanes beat the Islanders 6-3 down in Raleigh. I hit that bet. I told you the Islanders are probably favored to win the Stanley Cup by most experts in the East. You know, even over Tampa, because Tampa lost a lot of players. A lot of people think Tampa's going to win 3 in a row, and most hockey people don't think so. They're on the Islanders, and I went on the Canes tonight because they're a good team. And I hit the Jackets over the Coyotes 8-2. NBA, about to go Lakers and Kings on NBA TV. That'll be fun to watch if you can get a piece of it. Nets won by 6 over the T-Wolves. Hawks blew out the Heat. And right now, a good one. The Thunder lead the Nuggets with 2 minutes left by 2, 98-96. No score. Runner at second for the Dodgers with 2 outs in the top of the 4th against Webb and the Giants at Oracle.
It's a jungle out there.
So many possibilities, prospects, and probabilities. It's easy to become overwhelmed.
That's where we come in.
Relax. We're your trusted source for expert information on sports gaming strategies and information. This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, so if we're on the bench and trouble brewing for Webb and the Giants here in the top of the 4th with 2 outs, runners at first and second. He just walked the batter on a full count. You got Betts at second. No score. Dangerous Justin Turner at bat against Webb. And, I mean, you're just asking for it, right? I mean, what are you doing? I mean, he walks Seager. So now, I mean, you just got nothing but trouble. I can smell it coming. It's unbelievable. I don't know, for some reason, he grounds out a little chopper to the mound. He's going to be able to throw him out. Oh, he throws it wide, but he got him. Oh, and Webb just choking with nerves. A horrible throw over to first. Bro, get in the game. Get your head together. He's laughing about it with your crappy-ass throw over to first. This ain't, you know, June. You know, this isn't July, August. This is, you know, elimination night. Game 5, winner take all, loser packing the glad bags. He's throwing it over to first like he's in some little league game. That was terrible. With Betts on second, are you kidding me? That was the easiest play, a chopper to the mound, and he went down there and turned and threw it almost into the dugout. Thank God the first baseman made a great catch. That was a terrible throw. My God. So I'm going back and forth between these games. I got to tell you, it's hard for me to put these alligators down. I want to I want to watch the baseball game, to be honest with you, because Tom Brady is just carving up the Eagles like it's Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, he is just carving slices of turkey breast all day. He's doing whatever he wants. 22 of 28, 195, two TDs. And, you know, they got the ball right now. Every time I blink, they have the ball. Fournette has more total yards than the Eagles, like, entirely. The entire Eagles football team doesn't have as many yards as Fournette. And there he is getting a first down and just piling and running over people. He gets 5 or 6 yards every time he touches the ball, and a touchdown on a, like, second and goal from the three. He ran through everyone. He just pile drove right through into the end zone. You know, there's one thing I'll admit. I've said on the air on Coast to Coast that this isn't a Super Bowl winning team this year. And I might be wrong. I mean, I'm wrong 30 times a day to begin with. But here's the deal. I didn't like their defense at all. That was my problem. Not the offense. Not Brady. It's the defense. And, you know, they've won 12 of 13 games. The bottom line is all they do is win. They went to the Rams and got their ass beat. Fair enough. I'll give you that. But I think they've been, winners. All they do is go out and get it done every week. It's like they lose a game. They didn't even blink. They just went right out and started winning again. And it drives you nuts, but it is what it is. And I'll tell you what, Brady is, he's just unbelievable. It really is. Like, watching him dominate NFL games at his age, it's become like a running joke, hasn't it? I mean, this guy just cannot be stopped. And, I mean, he looks 23 years old to me. What is the difference between that guy when he came into the league and now, other than he's 10,000 times better now than he was then? He is truly remarkable. He's unstoppable. He's great every week. He always comes through. He has big games every single week. He puts up huge numbers every single week. He is not done cutting this Eagles team up for dinner. He's just chewing and spitting them out completely. And, I mean, it is absolutely unbelievable. Mafia, what do you think when you watch Brady week after week after week after week after year after year after year just doing what he's doing? It really is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I mean, they put the stat up about how he's even better right now than he was in his 20s. I mean, I think that's a big part of the team you had around him. Even when he was playing, you know, in the Patriots before, it wasn't until his 30s that he got guys like Moss with him. Those first couple championships were all about the defense and the kicking and just scoring enough points, so they didn't put him with a lot of big-name players. And he made the best he could out of him. Now you got a loaded team right now in Tampa Bay the last 2 years, so that obviously helps those stats go up. But he's playing incredible. You can't ever take away what the guy has done. And it's even more amazing sometimes when you watch him play now and still get it done. I mean, all banged up, the thumb injury. He's not looking, you know, as sharp as he might have did earlier in the season. You know, he struggled in that New England game. He's putting up big numbers, but struggling a little bit here with, you know, some bad throws, but still playing great and dominating. It's a bad team. He's kicking their ass. I mean, I had the prop bet on him that he's going to get over 300 yards and 3+ touchdowns. I should have hit it already, honestly, the way they've been tearing them apart. He just threw that pick and hasn't gotten it in the end zone that third time, but he's still killing them.
Oh, my God. It's just like this game was over in the second quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, when they went up 21-7, the game was over. Like, I don't see how Philly comes back with that crappy team they have. I mean, it's just crap. The fans are booing them. And Hurts looks terrible. Tampa finally looks good defensively. I mean, this game's a waste of time, unless I'm crazy. I mean, I might be crazy.
No, you're not. But the only way this isn't a waste of time is if you're like me and you have some other side bets going on to keep you interested in it, because I already hit Antonio Brown anytime TD. I'm looking for, that over 30 points by the Bucks, because I didn't completely trust the over 53. I bet it, but I bet that a little lesser because I didn't trust Philly to come through with their points. As we're seeing, they're not kind of. So I took the Bucks over 30 on their own. I have also Godwin anytime touchdown. So I'm waiting for those ones. That's why I'm still watching this game. Otherwise, the result's pretty much done because Philly's not coming back. I know that the Bucks haven't put up the extra points that they should have. They should be up 35-7 right now. But still, Philly's hanging around, you know, within scoring distance, but they're not putting anything together. The last, five drives? For the half, they had that first touchdown on the opening drive. They marched down, hit Ertz, After that, it's been all punts and interception.
They're embarrassing. And I think you're over 30 with the Bucs will hit. There's no way they're done scoring. I think they'll score on this drive. I think they'll score at least two more touchdowns. Automatic. I mean, how do you stop them? They've scored three already. Now you're going to tell me they're going to be stopped by this team? I mean, we knew going into this game they had no defense. Now, the reason I took the 7 was really based off of the Kansas City game and the Carolina game. Against Kansas City, they went, you know, toe-to-toe with them, end-to-end with them, score-to-score with them, and then they, you know, made some mistakes, and Kansas City scored, you know, a couple extra times, and that was it. It was over, 42-30, whatever it was. And then they went and they won at Carolina, which nobody saw coming. And then you figure maybe they're finding their way that, you know, tonight on a primetime Thursday night game at the Link in Philly, that they would show up and score some touchdowns. And I thought that they would, but they're obviously incapable. Excuse me. I ate a ton of popcorn earlier, Mafia, and I was, you know, watching. There was a lot of action. I was watching a lot of games. I was eating bags of popcorn. I have everything. I got kernels stuck in my gums. I got belching going on. I got the burps going on. I got it all going on. And I got a lot of action going on in this game tonight that I, you know, it's got me fidgety. I'm fidgety, and I'm trying to get the Giants to somehow get some productivity going here, get somebody on base, get some runs. Because I think so far the Dodgers pitching ideas and their plan to go with two relievers to start the game and then go Urias the rest of the way is working, because he just struck out Bryant and he's making mincemeat out of the Giants right now. Later this hour, Rob Raines of StLouis.com, StLouisSports.com. We're going to get him on to talk about the Schilt firing. And we'll do that, find out what the hell happened to that manager. It's Pharrell on the Bench. They were going through the motions. They were lifeless.
I don't like that or condone that at all.
I play it straight up, yo.
So, yeah, we'll talk to Rob Raines of StLouisSportsPage.com coming up in about 15 minutes. About the Schilt firing, which was ruthless. I got to tell you, Urias' stuff is so filthy. I mean, by the way, the Bucs scored again, 28-7. Believe me, you're going to hit that 30. They're scoring again and again and again and again because the Eagles have literally flown the coop. They are finished. Put a fork in them. Game over. They're not even trying anymore. I mean, you remember the game when they were accusing the Steelers of quitting, the Bengals. They said that they weren't even trying. They just gave up. I mean, that's exactly what I'm seeing right now. The Eagles have given up. They're done. My son's sitting at that game on the 50-yard line watching that disaster. I just wanted him to see a good game. All he saw was Tom Brady owning Philadelphia all night in primetime, just out there looking like he owns the NFL. I mean, that it's his world and everybody else is just living in it. But back to Urias, he is really, his stuff is so filthy. He is throwing all kinds of stuff. I mean, hooks, sliders, fastballs. He has got, I mean, it looks like he's working five pitches tonight. I mean, the guy's been in the game for, this is his second inning, and he is dominating them. They got a runner at third, though, two outs. Crawford at third. Wilmer Flores is up. It's a 2-2 count. You remember him, Mafia? Didn't he play for the Mets?
Yeah. Yes, he did. Absolutely. Played for them for a couple years. And you know what?
I didn't even know he was on the Giants.
at least your son can leave a little early, get home, so he gets some sleep before school tomorrow night. I don't have to worry so much about him not making it in the morning, because he can leave early and trek back from Philly. No use in staying there.
He got Flores to pop out to second, or the shortstop caught it. It was just a feeble pop-up. In a scoreless game five, and it is pressure. Every at-bat now is pressure, and the Dodgers' pitching looks so unbelievable. I mean, you got Urias. He looks incredible. And to me, Webb looks like he doesn't know whether he's coming or going, even though he's scoreless. I told you, he threw the ball away at first. Luckily, the first baseman caught it, but this doesn't look good. I don't have a good feeling about the Giants. The last thing I want to watch is the Dodgers going to another NLCS and World Series. I just can't take it. I mean, at some point, I just cannot take it. So I want to check on these college football scores again. Mafia, very important. Memphis up 35-17 on Navy with 4 minutes left. And South Alabama with 8.5 left up 38-14. That's a done deal there. The South Alabama game is a done deal, because I think I laid 3 in that game, like I said, and then 10.5 in the other one. The Memphis game is the one that's at risk. But they're still up, and they're still covering right now. And even if, Navy scored, they'd still cover by 1. Unless Navy went for 2, which they probably will. But what good's it going to do them? If they score and go for 2, it's I'd lose the bet. If they go for 2, I'd be screwed. So it'd be, that would screw me. It'd be 35-25 then if they converted the 2. And I laid 10.5, and I'd lose by the hook, and I'd jump off a bridge. I mean, Navy's awful. Can we just end the game, Memphis, and get it done? They're at midfield, 3rd and 4. Can you just move it down and do something? Score a touchdown, kick a field goal, do something, except let them come back door and screw me. Would that be all right? God almighty. I mean, Tuesday I hit Louisiana to win outright against Appalachian State, who was favored in that game. So I won both sides of that bet. And then I'm going for, 4-0 tonight, because they do a money line and spread on all those games. Last week, I hit Coastal and covered, Houston and covered, Cincinnati to win, Temple didn't cover, hit Charlotte to win and covered, hit Arizona State to win, and Stanford didn't cover. But I went 8-2, and now I'm sitting here already 2-0 for the week, and looking to go 4-0 tonight, which would be 6-0 for the week already. So you do the math. It'd be 14-2 the last 2 weeks in games before Saturday. 14-2 in college football bets on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday night, whatever, before Saturday. College games before Saturday, I would be 14-2 in 2 weeks. And that's even before tomorrow night's slew of games. Marshall at North Texas, Clemson at Cuse, Cal at Oregon, San Diego State at San Jose State, which I think is going to be an actual good game right there. Tomorrow night, we'll have all that going while we're on. And we'll talk to Joe Lisi, Gopher to 2, about all of Saturday's big games, and we'll hit all those games. You know, every week Joe comes on and gives me all of his picks, and then Mafia and I argue with him about whether we like him or not and what we're doing at the window with these games on the money line and spread. And, a lot of his bets, he does a lot of totals as well. And we look for good bets. And then during the day on Saturday, even on Sunday, I drop tons of prop boat activity in the lagoon. I give you props left and right, games to bet on my Twitter at Pharrell on Grid. And of course, you can get all my college and pro football picks at PharrellOnTheBench.com. So I think Mafia just told me the Eagles scored a touchdown It's a miracle.
Yeah, they went,
Hurts.
Went for it on fourth and three at the six, and Jalen Hurts ran it in all the way. So they get up to 14 now. They'd only only have to double their score from now to the end of the game without giving up any points to just tie the Bucks. That shouldn't be too hard, right?
I can't even believe they scored. I mean, this guy Hurts has been under pressure every time he snaps the ball. He's running for his life. They're down two touchdowns. They have no right to even be in this game. When you're down 28-7, you're done. Now it's 28-14, and they all are cheering and think they're in the game. They're not in the game. Do you think for 1 minute that they are going to win this game, Mafia? There is no way.
Not a snowball's chance in hell, but I just want them to keep scoring and hit that over 53.
Mike Trout's at the game with his friends. Of course, he's an Eagles season ticket holder. Fox has an affinity for showing Mike Trout at every Eagles game. They just love to show him every time he's at an Eagles game, and they always talk about how he's a season ticket holder for some reason. You know, I wish somebody would talk about Mike Trout, you know, playing baseball again for once. He missed the entire season. And it really is unbelievable that that guy missed the entire year. Boy, he just got a big strikeout web of Lux. And, you know, I won't deny he's throwing a shutout. So I'm not going to sit here and act like he's not doing his job. But there's something about it that just seems nervous for me in terms of who's going to win this game. I bet on the Giants. I won't deny it. I really felt all season long that they were belly-to-belly the best team in the West, even better than the Dodgers, the World Series champs. I still thought that the Giants were better. And, you know, I just thought that the way they held on to the West, they would find a way, which they did. And then the way they are in this series, it's game five, they're playing at home, that they'll still somehow come away with it because they've, you know, figured everything else out all season long, that they would do it again here tonight. So far, nobody's been able to play to run. Go figure. A scoreless game five. I thought the game would be an over. I thought it'd be, and I don't do totals, but we talk about it on Sports Grid TV, and I said, yeah, I think they'll score runs. I thought this would be a wild game, and it's obviously not. It's going to be another 1-0, 2-1 game at best, right? Doesn't it look that way, Mafia? I mean, where are the runs going to come from? All of a sudden? I mean, no one can do anything.
No, it looks like if there's going to be any scoring, it's going to have to be when you get to the bullpen. I mean, Webb's still got a decent pitch count going. 63 is not bad. That's the second time he sat Lux down looking, too. The guy's got to take the bat off the shoulder, get involved here. I mean, he's just watching pitches go by, hit the corners, and sitting them down. But Webb's pitching well. Urias is dealing. You know, since he came in, we wondered if he'd be okay doing that, coming out of the bullpen. That's not what he did all this year. He did it once last year, but it's been forever. But both these guys are doing exactly what you'd expect from these guys, you know, from what they've done all year.
Yeah, it is amazing to me. I'm watching Bellinger with another weak dribbler to the mound. How bad he's been. What in the hell happened to Cody Bellinger? He went from the penthouse to the outhouse. I mean, this guy, I mean, he has literally turned into a bum. I mean, he can't do anything. I mean, I really don't care what anybody thinks. Like, this guy, I mean, he can't even... I hope for his sake he has a double or a home run later in the game, but I mean, this guy can't do anything right. It's Pharrell on the bench.
You're living through a revolution. Sports gaming is sweeping the country.
You can feel it.
Soon you'll be drowning in noise from posers and wannabes.
They have noise.
We have analysis and expert information.
Stick with who you know.
This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. Rob Reigns is everybody with STLSportsPage.com in St. Louis. And we thought he'd be able to tell us and shed some light about the Schilt firing, which, you know, basically stunned the baseball world today. Rob, thanks for coming on the bench. So I know they're, I know their president of baseball operations talked about it, and I just don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. I really don't. I mean, explain this to me, all this nonsense about philosophical differences. Is that what they say when the wife's leaving the husband? And, you know, I mean, it's Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. No, I was going to say it. We, you know, he said that today during the news conference and was asked several times if he could go into detail or offer some examples of what those differences were, and he declined to do that. So that's it. Just left everybody guessing about what happened between the two of them. Obviously, their relationship got off kilter somewhere, and when Mozeliak's the one that has the power, he's the one that made the decision. So, but what exactly led to today's decision? I don't think we really have any real clue as to what happened yet.
So, I mean, he said something about, something popped up recently, but once again, wouldn't elaborate on that. I mean, no offense to this guy, honestly, but does anyone have the stones to do something like this to somebody and then have the audacity to go into a press conference and not answer any questions and play stupid? I mean, this guy, where did they find this guy, Big John, with all of his no answer stuff? I mean, it's like listening to Al Davis's son not answer questions about his head coach, the racist, said the league has all the answers. Don't bother me. I mean, this guy with the Cardinals, something popped up, but we don't want to talk about it. Next question, please. I mean, it really was pathetic. I mean, didn't you think at some level?
Yeah, I wish he would have gone into more example. I mean, I think it's a good relationship with both those guys. I've known, both of them for a long time and covered them both for a long time and respect both of them. And it just seems like there was something that got crosshair between the two of them. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I don't know why you wouldn't just say that, and say it was something that we disagreed on that, we made a decision to move forward. But everybody, I think even after last week, after they lost to the Dodgers, everybody thought, well, it's just a matter of time till, Show gets an extension. He's got going into the last year of his contract. They never want to have a guy, managing on a lame duck contract. And we thought, we'd get a 2-year deal done at some point this winter, and it seemed like a no-brainer. And then this kind of came out of left field and caught everybody off guard this morning. And I know that Schilt was blindsided by the information, from what I was told when he got the call this morning, that they were making the change. So I don't think he saw it coming. So if he didn't see it, I don't know why anybody else should have. It just was something that John Mozeliak decided was the move he wanted to make.
I have to tell you, though, I think it's pathetic. I really do. How in God's name? I joked on TV today that how does a guy win 90 games in a row and then gets to the wild card game and then takes the Dodgers to the brink at Chavez Ravine? And I basically called it Marty Schottenheimer disease. I mean, how do you go 14-2 and get fired? How do you win 90 games in a row, jokingly, and get fired? Right. What did he win, 17 in a row and 18 of 19 or something like that? Was the greatest run in baseball this year. That's the greatest run I think they've ever had. How do you fire a guy that does that?
Mozeliak did say it was not a reaction to what happened this year. It was not about wins and losses. It was just more about the overall direction of the franchise going forward. And I don't know if that meant there was some changes that Mike wanted to make, or maybe as far as the coaching staff was concerned, that Mo didn't want to make, or if it was something to do with the roster moves that Mike wanted. I mean, there was, you can speculate about a whole lot of different things about what the reasons were, but the fact of the matter is there's only two people that know, and that's John Mozeliak and Mike Schilt. So we know what Mo said today at the press conference. I texted back and forth with Schilt this afternoon, and he politely declined to comment at this time, or for the time being. So I think at some point we'll hear his side of the story, and maybe then we'll know a little bit more about, what went wrong between these two guys.
I mean, the guy said that they take a lot of pride in the 17-game winning streak and creating history for the organization. It's something you take pride in. A lot of times these decisions aren't just based on the season. More to a point, it's directionally where we want to go. So you must want to go in a – you know what it seems like to me, Rob? You must want to go in a direction like the Yankees, where they have the front office, and you know, Cashman makes all the decisions. There's no need for a manager. I mean, Aaron Boone's a puppet. They fire every single guy on his staff every year, and they never blame him for anything. And that's because he doesn't manage the team. You can't blame a guy that doesn't manage when the GM does the managing and the analytics department does the managing. Is that where the St. Louis Cardinals are headed, where they don't need a manager at all? They're just going to have a robot make the decisions upstairs.
I think you could come to that conclusion, maybe. I mean, I think you could say that there was, the front office has their ideas. I mean, obviously, they've become more and more, you know, invested in the analytical side of it, and have added people into that department and tried to strengthen that department and tried to, you know, create more influence over personnel decisions, you know, both draft-wise and, you know, I think minor league, you know, promotion-wise, and you know, certainly at the big league level. So I don't know if there was some pushback there from the field staff about that, if that was part of the problem. As I say, we could sit here and speculate all night about what happened, because I think it just comes down to the fact that there was something that that got between these two guys that they didn't feel like they could work it out and move forward to be together as a team. Mo did say something about, you know, wanting the guy that's going to be in charge to be on the same page. So obviously there was something that they disagreed about, but they weren't on the same page about, and it was something that they didn't feel like, you know, at least from the front office standpoint, didn't feel like they could, you know, have a manager in place that wasn't on board with what they wanted to do. So
the owner, DeWitt, said that he values continuity. So that must mean, where I come from, that means you keep going successfully with something that's working, as opposed to firing a guy that just made it all work. So I can't wait to see the continuity of the next manager they're going to hire, that they're going to fire in a couple years. I mean, yeah, honestly, has anyone caught up with Schilt yet to see what, you know, what the bat to the back of his head felt like?
No, he politely declined to comment today when I reached out to him. So I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point. But obviously today was just not the day that he felt like saying something. He's, you know, he's a smart guy. Been, you know, in this organization for 18 years, so I know how upset he is by what happened, and probably just didn't feel like it was in his best interest to say something before he had time to kind of, you know, collect his thoughts and figure out what, you know, how he wants to react to this. Because I'm sure he's going to want to move on and get another job in baseball, and I think he's deserving of another job in baseball. And, well, you know, the current couple clubs now have job openings that I think would be a big mistake on their part if they don't reach out and talk to him. But since he does have a year to go on his contract, he, you know, has a little bit of flexibility. He could sit back and wait and, you know, find the right opportunity going forward, you know, next season. But, you know, he's too good of a baseball guy. Been around the game, you know, his whole life. It's all he knows. I think that somebody will realize that and try to make a move here as soon as they can to get him.
So what that means in Portuguese is that the Padres, A.J. Preller, should be on the phone with him right now as we're speaking.
I think that's a perfect fit, honestly. He's, you know, Mike wants to win. I mean, Mike's the guy that values championships. He values, you know, the you know, effort it takes to put in to get a championship. And I think he would primarily be interested in going someplace where he felt like the ownership was behind him and wanted that goal too, and wanted to be around a team that he felt was on the verge of contending, or at least contending for a championship, if not, you know, being a favorite for a championship. So that's the kind of job I think he's going to be looking for.
You know, Rob, I got to tell you, I think the game's changing in such a way that, as we kind of brought up earlier, is that there's no such thing anymore as that ownership and management believes in you, because if it's simple, if you don't do what they say to run the club the way they want upstairs with analytics and everything else, you have no chance of succeeding or keeping your job in Major League Baseball anymore. I mean, it's proof here with Boone, and now it's, to me, obvious proof in St. Louis that that's the way they run it. And then they tell you it's private what we decide. We're not going to tell you anyway. So why ask? Why ask? So we will make the assumption that's exactly what they're doing, and it is what it is. And I think the game's changing horribly in that direction, to the point where today on TV, I just said that. Who needs managers at all anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I mean, I think the good managers, you know, the guys like, you know, Tony La Russa, Whitey Herzog, the guys that I've been around, you know, here in past, you know, generations, you know, they ran the team. You know, basically somebody from the front office tried to come in there, clubhouse, they tell them to, you know, get the heck out of the door, you know, and this is my team, this is my clubhouse. And I think that the game has changed in that respect. And I think, you know, it's like everything else with analytics and scouting, everything else. I think the best teams that run, that have the most success, that are, that, you know, teams you can see in the playoffs year in, year out, they have a blend. You know, I mean, they understand the old school approach and the traditional baseball values and how you win games. But I think they also accept the new technology and new, you know, analytics and stuff like that, and can incorporate them into what they try to do. I think the teams that kind of go too far the new way are not successful, and I think the teams that don't, you know, resist the changes and don't, you know, want to incorporate those things into their game, they're having trouble too. So, but I guess the secret is to try to find that blend. The secret is to try to, you know, find the old school baseball people that are teachers, that are, you know, understand the game and value the you know, intricacies of the game, that the human element to the game, and then but it can also take that other information and you know, figure how to make it work for them.
Respectfully, I got 90 seconds, Rob. I always love hearing your opinion. Who was better, Whitey or Tony?
That's like asking you to pick between my kids. You know, I mean, they're different. You know, I think they're entirely different personalities, entirely different people, but I have tremendous respect for both of them.
I mean, that's just not juicy enough for me, Rob. Which one do you like better as a manager? Which one do you think was a better manager?
I always thought what? Whitey.
Whitey.
If I had one game to manage, I'd want it to be Whitey.
I do too. I just had to squeeze you like that last shot of mustard out of before your hot dog doesn't taste good. You got to get that last squeeze out. And I'm with you on Whitey.
I'm not a mustard guy. It doesn't matter.
I got you to say Whitey. That's all that matters. I said Whitey. You said Whitey. We're on the same page. Go ahead and have your ketchup on your hot dog, Rob. Hey, I always love talking to you. Rob Raines, STLSportsPage.com in St. Louis. We'll get you on C2C again on the TV side and on the radio side again soon. Thanks a lot, Rob.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Rob Raines in St. Louis. Here's the Dodgers. Betts back on base with one out, a single to the left. And the Dodgers are scaring me tonight, Mafia. They're just creating more action on the base pass. Their pitching seems almost hitless. You can't even get a hit on them. And they're just doing more in this game to create trouble and to get into scoring position and to try to play to run. It's starting to look more and more in the sixth that one run's going to do it. And by the way, in one run... problem with people. Everybody expects every team in the effing league to win the Super Bowl. One team wins. The rest of them lose.
Nothing for you.
How about that? One last indignity.
So, just as I said before the break, that Betts got on again. They're creating all the problems. They're getting chances. They're trying to play to run, and they're doing way more than the Giants. And sure enough, Seager doubled to left. Betts scored. It's 1-0 Los Angeles. Turner's up now with Seager at second and one out. I would have pulled Webb. I know he pitched great. I would have pulled him right then on the double. And instead, they're going to leave him out there. And I could just smell it coming, as I said before, that they are not done scoring here. I will be surprised if it's one zip after this at bat by the Dodgers. I mean, you got Turner up right now, and you got Seager at second. Another single. Literally, this game could be over. I don't know why Kapler left him in there. The minute the kid gave up the double, his night was over in my book. He lost, you know, the control of the game right there. But Betts scoring, it's one zip. Now his head's spinning. I know he pitched great. I know he had good stuff all night. I thought he was fantastic until right then. And then in a game five, now Turner struck out. I don't know. I still don't agree with it. I still don't agree with leaving him in a game five where winner take all, you give up a run, it's the beginning of the end. And if you give up another one, the game's over. In my view, the game will be over. So he got Turner to strike out. But let's see if the Dodgers add to this lead or not. It's for Owen Bench.